And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD report. Hoops HD report, that's what we're doing tonight on this Thanksgiving week. And here to join us is our Thanksgiving crew of college basketball analysts, beginning with myself, Chad Sherwood. Let me start by introducing the rest of our panel here and wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving as well. As we're recording this around 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Monday evening, just a few nights away from the big turkey feast. Let me start with John Titel back with us again. John, how are you doing?
Good. I give thanks at this time of year for the start of college basketball. We're only 10 days in, and it's already seen upsets and freshmen, superstars, and everything in between.
That is true. Second with us is John Stalika. John S., how are you doing, John, there? And
on my couch. He's on my couch.
I'm doing quite wonderful, and as you can see, I'm thankful that I can do a little bit of house-sitting while David Griggs is out and about.
And out and about, yes, we have a... We still are waiting for Diallo to get eligible from Kansas, so we have sent on special assignment to Indianapolis this week David Griggs. That's why he's not here on video, just by phone. David, how are you doing out there on our special assignment to the NCAA to get to the bottom of this?
I'm terrible, Chad.
What happened?
Well, okay, so you know how people like to kind of take some memorabilia, souvenirs,
yes.
You know, posters or like pamphlets or handouts? Well, that's what I was doing, and they called the police. I mean, granted, I was taking laptop computers as my paraphernalia, but that's I people at the NCAA, they just don't know what they're... Screw them.
So I guess we don't have an update on the Diallo situation from you then.
Well, at the time I was arrested, he was still not cleared.
Oh, okay. well. What our game plan for this evening is, we're going to start with a few pieces of news and notes. We're also then going to move into kind of a review of the major conferences from the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Big East, Pac-12, SEC, a few other conferences as well, but really the major teams from the multi-bid leagues. We're going to do a bit of a preview at the end of the show of some of the upcoming games as well. But let's start with some news and notes, and we just did mention the Diallo situation, so let's stick with that for a second here. Still not eligible, although he is with the team in Maui for the Maui Invitational Games. On top of that, even though Diallo is not eligible, there are more problems for Kansas. Let me throw it over to you, John T., on this. They also lost one of their key reserve players now for a suspension.
Yeah, they lost Brandon Green for 6 games. I forget if it was academics or behavior or whatever, but he's certainly not the star of the team, but he's a key glue guy who can nail some threes. I saw him play in person in D.C. a year or two ago. He nailed like 5 or 6 threes to beat Georgetown. It was very impressive. Obviously, they can withstand the losses in November of guys like Diallo and Green. I hope they get it taken care of soon, because that will bite them in the butt in March if it's still hanging around.
Well, as we record this now, Kansas is playing Chaminade. You know, the crazy upset happens, we'll go back and edit this podcast. But yeah. I anticipate they'll win that one. But you know, the next two games they have out here coming up in Maui are going to be tough without these two guys. And David, what is going? Do you have any real news about what's going on with Diallo and why it's just so ridiculously long to get him cleared?
I don't know. It's just, well, the NCAA has a chance to not be conscious of other people's time or situations or anything. And they're just clearly not in any hurry, because why should they be? It doesn't affect them. It's utterly absurd. I don't understand what the issue is, what they're trying to clear, what they're trying to resolve. And to me, eligibility, having been somewhat familiar with it, I mean, there are some gray areas, but it's pretty much black and white. You just want to say, look, he either is or isn't. It's not fair to string him along. I do think the fact that they granted him a waiver to travel with the team is a good sign, because that's one of the things, most people may not realize this. If you're not eligible, you can't practice, you can't travel, you can't really do anything. And the fact that they're allowing him to do those things, they're just not allowing him to compete, is a sign that at least... I don't think they would grant that if they didn't think he was ultimately going to be cleared. But clear him. What is the holdup? And I like that Kansas issued not really an ultimatum, but it's just, look, it's been this long. This is ridiculous. Get this. The fact that they're speaking out publicly about it now is good.
Yeah, you talk about the letter that Bill Self or the statement that Bill Self made in public, you know, basically condemning the NCAA. And we talked about this 2 weeks ago that it was ridiculous he wasn't cleared yet. And now we're 10 days into the season and on the verge of their – I mean, they didn't have him for their first big game last week, and now they've got more big games coming up this week.
Yeah.
But let's also turn to one other piece of news this past week. The announcements were made about the College Basketball Hall of Fame. We had five players going into it. Charlie Scott, Rolando Blackman, Quinn Buckner, John Havlicek, and Ed Ratliff, along with three coaches, Lou Henson, Don Doner, and C. Felton Gales, from Langston University, not somebody that I was actually familiar with. But and John T., you actually posted an article on the site today, an interview that you had with Coach Henson, though. Can you give us a little insight on him and these other inductees?
I'd be happy to. Henson, an amazing coach. He won over 250 games at two different schools, New Mexico State and Illinois. I think one of his most famous moments was making the Final Four in 89 with that amazing Illini team. Kenny Battle and a host of other amazing scorers. They just ran into a Michigan team that was a team of destiny with Glenn Rice. Two of the other players I want to give a shout-out to are people I've interviewed in the past, and we'll try to host the interviews later this month. Ed Ratliff, who played at Long Beach State for Jerry Tarkanian. This year it marks the 45th anniversary that they made it to the tourney and lost by 2 points to UCLA, which was the closest that anyone came to beating the Bruins during a seven-year run from 67 to 73, where they won the title every year. The other Kansas State legend, Rolando Blackman, this is the 35th anniversary of his famous shot in the 81 tourney. He made a 17-foot baseline jumper at the buzzer and ended up on the cover of Sports Illustrated in an upset of number one seed Oregon State. All deserving players and coaches. Very happy to see that they all are now Hall of Famers.
Just a quick note, John mentioned that fantastic Illini team from 1989. We have a very unfantastic Illini team in action tonight, down 12 at home to Chicago State as we're recording. Just wanted to share that.
But let me talk to John S. here also on the Hall of Fame induction. You're a bit of a student of the history of the game. Your thoughts about any of these inductees?
I like the mention about Long Beach State. Jerry Tarkanian had quite a few good teams at Long Beach, and this was a time when the West Regional was really that, just teams from the West, namely the, I guess what was then the Pacific 8 Conference, the Western Athletic Conference, and I think the West Coast Athletic Conference, which was a precursor of the WCC, and then there was one other conference that I can't think of offhand that also included some fine New Mexico State teams that you had mentioned.
Yep. You also had, John T., reading your interview today with Coach Henson, one of the fascinating things, and I don't think I'd even realize this, when he came back to coach the second time at New Mexico State and agreed to do it for $1 a month just to help out the team after going through some problems, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, he's an amazing charitable guy. He said, we could always use a little extra money, but I didn't need it, and it's my alma mater, and I'll do him a favor. I mean, very generous.
I just don't see that as being something that would happen today anywhere with anybody, no matter what.
And if I'm not mistaken, he's one of the few guys that has a court named after him in two separate arenas.
Yeah.
Did they name the court after him in New Mexico State also? I wasn't certain of that.
Yeah.
I know Pat Summitt on the women's side has two courts named after her, both at Tennessee and Tennessee Martin. But let's move on to our run through the conferences here and some of the actual games that have been played and some great games that have been played. And let's start in the ACC, where at the beginning of the year, I think between our group here, our panel here, we chose three different ACC teams as our projected champions in Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina. We definitely, they definitely were all favorites to potentially be Final Four teams this year. As we sit here right now, all three of them have lost at least one game. Well, I think they've all lost exactly one game, actually. But let me start with you, David. What is your thoughts about these, about all three of those teams here, Duke, Virginia, and Carolina, and the starts or the losses that they've had so far, I guess?
Well, Duke's loss to Kentucky is hardly alarming. They're a really young team. They, you know, I think they dropped a game or two early last year, although they did win at Wisconsin. I still think that Duke will harden. I don't think it's much of a setback at all. Same with Virginia. If anything, I think when you go on the road and play a game like that early against a regional opponent, even if you don't win it, I think that it gets you more acclimated to playing on the road and playing in hostile environments. And I think they actually are going to benefit from it more than they're going to suffer from it, although it is a blemish on their record. I don't think of it as much as a setback. And I wasn't that surprised. I thought they'd win the game, but I'm not shocked that they didn't. The one that really did kind of surprise me was North Carolina losing it at Northern Iowa. And again, this is a really good Northern Iowa program. We are all big fans of Ben Jacobson and what he's done there. But they lost so much from last year. They appeared to be in such rebuilding mode that it's just the kind of game you would expect North Carolina to win. I know it's a showcase game. I know it's that. But I don't know. And it just raises the question, Is North Carolina not as good as they cracked up to be? Is Northern Iowa a lot better? And then when you look back, do you realize that for the last 6 years, North Carolina has lost to an unranked team in November? Northern Iowa this year, Butler last year. Now, to be fair, Butler went on to get into the rankings and stay there, but they were unranked at the time. They lost to Belmont the year before. You go back 6 years in a row, this North Carolina team has lost to an unranked team in November. So I just thought that was an interesting bit of trivia.
Let's stick here on this North Carolina issue. Now, Marcus Paige, obviously the star player of the team, was not there. You were, as you said, the showcase game for Northern Iowa for the entire season, really, in terms of home games. John S., let me throw it to you. Are you concerned about Carolina, or do you think it was just one of those games, like David mentioned, as they've had the last few years?
Well, North Carolina has played, I guess, what you could call a layover game before, where they would be on their way to an exempt event. I think they've played at Long Beach State in the past en route to a tournament appearance in Hawaii. So I guess it's not terribly shocking that they would lose to Northern Iowa, although I guess what's a little eye-opening is Northern Iowa was not expected to be NCAA caliber this season.
Let me throw it over to you, John T., about the other two teams here. Duke, despite the loss, came back and won the 2K Classic, beating VCU and Georgetown. Virginia came back and won the Charleston Classic.
Impressively.
Yeah. Your thoughts on these two teams, and are they still among the top four or five teams in the country at this point?
I think they are. I mean, the Northern Iowa loss was a bad loss. Duke's loss to Kentucky they're the best team in the country, no sweat there. And Virginia's loss, which I was at in person last week, was a close loss, but it was on the road in a tiny little gym of a school that's undefeated in the GW Colonial. So I think that they're all fine. What's amazing to me is two things. Duke's schedule is going to be brutal in February. Back to back to back to back. Louisville, Virginia, Carolina, Louisville. Like, I know Louisville's having an off year, but that is just a brutal stretch in the ACC. And the amazing thing to me about Virginia is just their offense. I mean, we all know they're an amazing defensive team from last year. I think they had the number one or amongst the best defenses in the nation at giving up like 52, 53 points a game. This year, in their four wins, 86 points, 82 points, 87 points, 83 points. This team can score, and with that defense, that's just unstoppable.
Now, it's funny you mentioned Virginia and surprises. We've already mentioned one local foe in George Washington. There was one local team they never expected to meet that we'll get into a little bit later in George Mason.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly bring back to that Louisville point now. They are currently on RPI. Louisville is the number two RPI team in the country, but of course RPI is meaningless this early this season. Despite all the Virginia, Duke, North Carolina talk, I don't think that any of those three has been the most impressive team so far out of the ACC.
And David,
You know who we're talking about here. How impressed are you about what Miami has done so far?
Extremely. I am not just impressed, but surprised. They have not had to sweat out a game yet, and they've played some really good teams. They've played Butler. I think that they've at this time, point in the year, if you're looking at just at merit, they've been as impressive as anyone in the country. And just about all of it was done away from home. I remember watching, and I think like you and I were watching it together, was when they were just blowing out what we thought was a pretty formidable Louisiana team. Now, again, that's not to say that we thought that Louisiana was a top 25 team, but we thought that they were pretty good, and Miami's just stomping all over them, and our thought was, well, man, Louisiana must be terrible. No, Miami is really good. They are really good this year. They're ranked 16th. I think that's what I saw today, and you could make a case that they should even be higher than that.
I thought that they may have been able to crack the top 10 this week. They didn't. They came in at number 16 in the poll. But John T, 93-77 over that Louisiana Lafayette team, 105-79 over Mississippi State, 90-66 over a ranked Utah team, 85-75 over a ranked Butler team. I guess I'm kind of reminded about 3 years ago when they came out really strong early and they ended up winning the ACC and the ACC tournament. Is that how good this Miami team might be?
I'm not ready to put them in the ACC title game just yet or anything, but I think their schedule is very favorable. They've already gotten past the hardest part, which you just listed. Mm-hmm. They have the Gators coming up in a couple weeks, but it's in Miami, which I think could make the difference, even though the Gators with a new coach and a young team are not great this year. Good, not great. So I predict that I think they're going to run the table in November and December and be 12-0 entering ACC play when they host Syracuse on January 2nd. The ACC is one of the best, if not the best, conferences in the nation, so I wouldn't put Miami in the title game, but I think they're going to remain in the top 10 for several weeks to come.
John S., is there anybody else in the ACC that's particularly stood out for you so far this season?
I don't know if it's necessarily standing out in a good way, but we also have to look at Florida State and how they did in the Paradise Jam. They actually lost their opener to, I think it was Hofstra, but they have rebounded and got two wins to somewhat salvage their trip.
Don't forget what happened just a few minutes ago. Wake taking down Indiana. That's somewhat noteworthy.
And David, we're going to get there, but let me throw that right over to you. We kind of like this Wake Forest team a little bit heading into the season. They've already, I believe they lost a game, just slipped my mind for a second, to Richmond at home, and then they go out and just beat Indiana and Maui. How impressed are you by that win?
Reasonably impressed, but if you watch the game, Indiana's defense seems to be of the mindset that they don't want to annoy you or get in your way down the stretch, so they just kind of get out of your way and let you score. They were pretty pathetic, Indiana. I was more disappointed in Indiana than impressed with Wake, but it was still... This is the kind of win that can really catapult a program season, especially a program like Wake that's not used to being in the spotlight. It was a good job by them, good job by Danny Manning getting ready for it, and they get a chance at another formidable team tomorrow.
Let's use that as a segue to go right into the Big Ten and talk a little bit more about this Indiana team. One of the problems with losing to Wake today also is you now end up in the loser's bracket of the Maui Invitational, and instead of getting Vanderbilt tomorrow, you get St. John's tomorrow, and who knows, you might end up with Chaminade in the third game. It really hurts your strength of schedule down the stretch, too.
Yeah, I don't think it's as big of a deal for programs like Indiana, Wake Forest. I mean, their conference is going to provide them with the opportunities they need, but yeah, to your point, we're in the midst of what I think is one of the more important weeks of the year, or at least of the regular season, because there's so many opportunities at quality matchups away from home, and it's a tournament format. So the way the tournaments are structured is if you win, you're going to get chances to play better teams and build your resume even more. I think this is sort of the week that the cue ball hits the balls and splits everything, And for programs that are trying to make cases for themselves, a lot of it is done this week. Indiana, again, being in the Big Ten, they'll get other chances. But, yeah, to your point, they lost the chance to get out of the gate early, so to speak.
And I know Indiana fans will love me for doing this, but let's segue right over to Purdue. And John T., they won the Hall of Fame tip-off over the weekend, looking pretty impressive, I thought, doing so.
They did. I mean, Florida and Old Dominion are two solid teams, and they handled them both by 15-plus points each. A little bit of a tough road coming up. A Pitt team that I'm still not sure exactly where they're at. 20 minutes, they look great on opening night, and then we'll see what happens. And then they have a bunch of very bottom feeder teams to start off in December, and then a huge game against Butler on December 19th that's going to feature a whole lot of offense and a whole lot of good coaching. I would circle that Purdue-Butler game. I assumed that Indiana-Notre Dame would be the game of the year in the state, but I might have to change my mind now.
Well, that's actually the doubleheader, too, being played in Indianapolis is the
Crossroads Classic.
Crossroads Classic.
Yeah. And as of now, all four are ranked. I'm not sure that that's ever happened before. Well, I mean, not that it's a long historic event, but in the recent years that they've had it. So,
You also want to look at, after that Butler game, that they get Vanderbilt at home, so it might be a bit of a letdown game after that, too. So a couple tough tests there for Purdue.
I think Butler has actually fallen out of the polls temporarily because of loss to Miami. Mm-hmm.
John S., let me stick with you here for a moment. And another team of note from the past week has been this Michigan State team, where Denzel Valentine has been even better than I thought he would be, I think.
Yeah, they did get a nice signature win over Kansas as part of the was at the State Farm tip-off on ESPN last week.
Although the Legends Classic.
Yeah, you were teasing me, Chad. I thought you were going to go not to Michigan State, but to another team they beat on Saturday.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, that would be the Ohio State University.
Okay, let's talk a little Ohio State then, and your thoughts on what you've seen or not seen from the Buckeyes so far. I mean, we got to say not seen.
You can say what you want about Ohio State playing a lot of bye games and going to the bakery, but up until now, they had always won those bye games. But as of last Friday, Texas Arlington snuck into Value City Arena and hung by far the most shocking loss of the Thad Matta era.
Yeah, David, I don't think Texas Arlington was, as you and I are the under-the-radar guys even. They weren't even on my under-the-radar radar. I think I picked them to finish ninth in the Sun Belt. And to go in...
That's about right. There's some formidable teams in the Sun Belt. They did not appear to be one of them. It was rather jaw-dropping. And somebody made that point just as a general. It's like, boy, is it just me or are there a lot of upsets this year? It seems like you get that early in the year simply because, you don't really know who the good teams are, so you rank a team high that's really overrated, and it turns out they're not that good. Like, was Yale over UConn really an upset last year? It seems like we go through this every year. But the difference from this year is that the teams doing the upsetting are not the better teams that you would expect. Like, it's teams that you would think would be middle or lower level of their conference that are stepping up and winning these games. You know, had Little Rock beaten them or had, like, Louisiana Lafayette beaten them, it's not what you're expecting, but it isn't quite as shocking as Arlington doing it.
Right. And it seems like the Big Ten is the conference being victimized here. You had Wisconsin losing at home to Western Illinois. And, John T., let me bring you in here. Illinois has now lost at home to North Florida, to Chattanooga, and right now is in the process of losing to Chicago State on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, David just mentioned it. I'm looking forward to that Illinois-Yale game on December 9th. I think it could be a toss-up.
I'll tell you what I'm looking for as a Rutgers fan. I think we've got a shot at 13th place now the way Illinois is playing. But one other team that I think we'd be remiss on discussing the Big Ten without bringing up here is Maryland, of course. I think we mentioned them a little bit already. David... your thoughts on what you've seen from the Terps so far?
Overall, not as impressed. I mean, I know that they're 3-0. They had to sweat out a Rider team, which, again, we weren't that big on. They did have a you know, the win over a rival Georgetown team. That game in particular, it was just, I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but that is just to segue from that, that is what November basketball could be like. Somebody said, have you ever seen a game like that in the month of November? And I'm trying to remember if I ever had. And we've seen some really exciting games. We've seen overtime games. We've seen highly ranked teams duking it out in November. But that was a packed arena in a time of the year when most arenas aren't packed. It was very intense. I think it was the atmosphere and the intensity of the game as much as the excitement of the game. I think it's one of the better games I've seen at this time of the year in years. And, you know, props to – I'm just glad that that series is back. But overall, you know, Georgetown, I think they're a lot better than their record. But sweating out Georgetown, sweating out Ryder, I'm not as sold on the Terps yet.
Well, let's use as a segue here this over to the Big East. You just mentioned this Georgetown team. We also saw another Big East team prove to, I believe it's now I believe they're still undefeated here, and that's this Providence team. Got a game effort from NJIT tonight, but did come up with a victory. John S., I know you've been following NJIT, but what are your thoughts so far on this Providence team? Are they for real, or do we just not have the proof yet because their best win is over this Illinois team we were just discussing?
Well, we'll learn more about Providence when they go to the Wooden Legacy in Anaheim. But that was a nice back-and-forth game between NJIT and Providence earlier tonight. Because I think Providence led by as many as, 17 or 18 points before the Highlanders had managed to cut it to 4, but weren't quite able to get over the hump.
We've already mentioned this, the Georgetown team, of course. How about Villanova? They really haven't played anybody yet, John T. Is there anything that you've taken away from their games? Their best win was over Akron so far, I think.
I've taken away their defense. I knew they could score. They always seem to feature all the guards who can shoot threes and run up and down the court. But in 4 wins, they've given up 54, 63, 51, 56. That's like one of the best defenses in the nation. When you combine that with the offense, that seems pretty good. They've got some big tests ahead, Oklahoma and Virginia in December, before they get into Big East play. So we are going to get a good chance to see what they are made of.
Well, what do you mean they haven't played anybody?
David, the other undefeated Big East, the other undefeated Big East team is Xavier, who is getting by Northern Kentucky tonight. Your thoughts on what you've seen from the Musketeers so far?
They're fantastic when they want to be. Their first, you know, they opened the season against Miami, and they kind of, I don't want to, I don't
think it's fair to say that they,
yeah, Miami, Ohio, like, okay, yeah, Miami, Ohio, like, you know, the 10th best team in the MAC, if that. And kind of sweated them out, didn't really put it away. They then go to Missouri at home. You know, in Missouri, if you didn't see them tonight, don't bother. You might go blind if you go back and watch that game. Sweat out kind of that game, didn't put them away, and it's like, you know, they've played 4 bad halves against 2 really bad teams at home. Then they went up to Michigan and just played with such intensity, such fervor on the road against a really good Michigan team. And this is a Xavier team that for the last 2 years, up until maybe the very end of last year, couldn't win away from home. And so you're really impressed with that. They get into the rankings. I think they deserve to be. But now here they are going, again, not sweating out a transitional team, but not putting them away the way that a ranked team should. So I guess my thing is they're good when they want to be. But if they these are the kinds of teams that get beat in games that they should win because they just don't show up or step up or bring it every night like you need to.
I would actually say the last 3 years they've had a little bit trouble early on in the season, not just against decent teams away from home, but also during the preseason tournaments. Now, 4 years ago, they were coming off a nice win against Vanderbilt on the road. They went undefeated into their game against Cincinnati, but I tuned out after that game with 30 seconds remaining. I don't remember what happened afterwards.
Me neither.
Let's jump back over to the Big 12, which we mentioned a little bit when we discussed at the top of the show with Kansas. As we record this, both Kansas and Iowa State are dominating their games, and Iowa State against a Chattanooga team that's been pretty competitive so far this year. John T., your thoughts on both these teams and how they've been playing so far?
Kansas, too early to tell. Obviously, the loss to Michigan State was tough, only by 6 points, and Denzel Valentine was playing out of his mind, so a little too early. They have a pretty low-average non-conference schedule, especially because San Diego State has taken a turn for the worse. So I think they can seriously rebound in December and go into – I think they can enter Big 12 play with the only loss being to the Spartans.
Yeah, and David, what about this Oklahoma team? Have you been impressed by them so far? I know that a couple of people on our show here thought they were Final Four caliber. They've only played two games so far. They're playing their third one tonight.
Yeah, I've been somewhere around quite a bit impressed, I think. actually, like, I thought they would go into Memphis and clobber them. They really didn't. They really had to fight to get that win, and I still don't know if that's just a case of them not bringing it that day or if Memphis was really up for that game. There isn't a whole lot to go on here, but the more I look at this Oklahoma team, the more I really, really like them.
Right, and Buddy Hield, I believe, is already among the top leaders in the nation in scoring. I don't know if he's number one, but he's right up there. Let's toss it over now to the Pac-12. And John T., this being your conference, being an Arizona guy, let us know a little bit about what's going on in the Pac-12.
It is still Arizona's conference to lose, I'm happy to report. I had my doubts, and the Boise State game on Thursday, got to watch it at the local watering hole, and it was pretty close throughout until the Cats pulled away at the end. I was impressed by the offensive diversity. It's not just one guy. It's not just the starting five. They go legitimately like nine deep in terms of scorers. So the good news is if they get in foul trouble or if they get an injury, I don't think it's going to ruin their whole season. That being said, the Pac-12 seems pretty loaded this year, more so than I thought. UCLA, too early to tell. They might be on a downstretch, but Ducks seem like they're for real. Cal's freshmen are for real. Utah, uncertain. They've been up and down, but I think this could be – I'm not setting the over-under at 5 for the tourney, but I would not be surprised if they get 5 bids.
Well, and how about this Oregon team with wins already over both Baylor and Valparaiso? I think they've been a lot more impressive than I even thought they would be this year so far.
They have, led by a young freshman, Tyler Dorsey, who was a hotshot recruit. He played for Greece this year in some world championship action and really came out of his shell and showed the world what he's capable of. And their non-conference schedule looks pretty doable, too. I could see them, they're 4-0 right now, and I could see them getting through December without a loss, maybe.
Let me throw the conference over to David also. David, your thoughts on the Pac-12, anybody else you want to mention in this conference, what you've seen so far? We know Washington did have that win over Texas, for example.
Yeah, you kind of got to keep an eye on them. I mean, we weren't really big on Washington. They still might not turn out to be much of anything. I think last year they won their first 13 games and ended up missing the dance. Oregon State is 4-0 for the first time in 187 years or something like that, however long it's been. I know that they haven't done anything overly impressive. They blew out Iona. That's probably the most impressive thing that they've done. Wins against Santa Barbara, Rice. But, again, this is a team to keep an eye on. They are kind of one of my dark horses. I think that they might be everybody's dark horse, or at least we think their program's trending up. I wouldn't be surprised if they landed inside the bubble, and what a story would it be if they did. Their next game coming up is against a really good Valpo team, and I think this is a Valpo team that is an at-large caliber team. Now, and that's a test. If you're a tournament team yourself, you should be able to beat at-large teams at home. Again, this is Valpo's not a protected seed by any means, but how good is Oregon State? I think that's a really, really good game. I know we're going to get into this week's games coming up here later in the show, but that's a really good game coming up, and it's a great test for both of them.
It's also an unusual case of a Power 5 school actually playing in their first two games on the road this year at Cal Santa Barbara and also at Rice, if I'm reading my schedule correctly.
Yeah, they play both those on the road.
Jonas, let me stick with you as we move over to the SEC. And we're just coming off the end of the LSU Marquette game that tonight that we didn't really mention when we discussed the Big East. Let's talk about it now. Your thoughts you coming out of that game?
Over USC in the Pac-12, is that right?
If you want to discuss USC, let's talk a little USC before first.
Well, surprisingly, they are still unbeaten at this point. I mean, they did have a win over Monmouth, which is not going to impress the general public, but that was shortly after Monmouth had pulled off a win at UCLA. And then there was also a win against New Mexico, which the Trojans were able to pull off, which is not entirely easy.
Yeah, they've got Wichita State coming up later this week, though, so we're going to find out just how good they are, I think.
Right, that tournament out in Disney World, I guess.
Yeah. But John, let me stick with you again, though, on this LSU. Did you watch this LSU Marquette game, I assume?
Yeah, I did see some bits and pieces of it with both Simmons and Ellenson on both ends, and it was a nice back-and-forth game, especially in the final minute where Marquette finally pulled out. You want to talk about teams that are hard to figure out is Marquette, after looking almost dead for their first three games and suddenly get a nice win over LSU on a neutral floor.
On top of that, Ellenson fouls out with about a minute or so left in the game, and Simmons is still in there. And in the final possession, Simmons could have put up the shot and instead passed it off, and they ended up with a very long three at the buzzer. I was kind of thought the shot selection was pretty poor there, and almost like Simmons didn't want to take the shot. John T., is that just a matter of him being a freshman and trying to get into the system, or do you have any thoughts on that?
He's getting a lot of flack. All the TV commentators were getting on his case. I understand that you want your best player to take the shot with the game on the line, but, like, he is a passer. His stats are ridiculous. Like, the 19 points and 13 boards a game, I mean, that's All-American caliber right there. He's averaging almost 5 assists a game, leading the team. I mean, he's not LeBron James, but he does it all in terms of getting the offense, getting everyone involved, besides doing it himself. He put up 21-20 tonight. He's second-ever freshman to be the SEC preseason player of the year. There were 51 scouts in attendance tonight in Brooklyn. Think about that. There's only 30 or so teams in the league, and most of them sent 2 scouts, even though he's going to be the first pick. And only, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Let me stick with you, John, for a second here. Vanderbilt also came up with a win today, albeit over St. John's. An undefeated St. John's team before the game, I guess you could say. You were very suspect of this Vanderbilt team, I remember, coming into the season. Have you changed your mind on them yet?
I have. My apologies to Kevin Stallings. I am firmly on the bandwagon, even though an overtime win over Stony Brook is their best win so far. Very tough non-conference schedule. Baylor, Dayton, Purdue in December. Like, we're going to see what they are made of. They start SEC play on January 2nd against LSU at home. But so far, I'm a believer. The offense and defense seems it's really clicking. They've scored over 90 twice so far. So offense is for real if the defense comes to play as well. They will win 20 games and make the tourney, I think.
And so them beating St. John's changed your opinion. Wow,
it certainly helped. The previously undefeated St. John's team.
Yeah, undefeated in the borough of Queens, I might add.
Yeah. David, of course, we can't discuss the SEC without discussing the most important team, and you know I'm talking about is South Carolina, of course, with Frank Martin, who is not only undefeated, but as we record this, currently blowing out Tulsa in the championship game of the Paradise Jam. Any thoughts on what you've actually seen out of South Carolina, first of all?
Surprisingly impressed. I wasn't expecting anything from them this year. Now, I am aware that they kind of got off to a fast start last year and then faded into nothing. But if they win this tournament, they will have won 3 games away from home. Tulsa is good. I mean, they had the home win against Wichita State. They've had some big wins out in this tournament. If South Carolina gets out of this, I mean, they're out of the gate pretty quick, and you got to start thinking that looks good on an NCAA tournament resume, what they've done so far. What have they done so
far? well, John asked, let me, of course, the other team that I seriously need to discuss in the SEC always is Kentucky, now the number 1 team in the nation. probably deservedly so with the Duke win and the NJIT win. But maybe a while before we get another good test for them, though.
Well, I guess we're not counting Wright State as a good test then.
If you want to count that as a good test, but that game is over. They did win that one.
I mean, at least they avoided the letdown that Maryland almost seemed to have.
But this is
also one of the few years where Kentucky is not going to be playing in a marquee event for Thanksgiving or the Christmas holidays. Right. But they'll still have some other notable non-conference tests coming up during the course of the season.
But if you look at it, I mean, they've got UCLA on the road, Arizona State at home, they've got a neutral court game with Ohio State, a home game against Louisville. None of these programs are programs that have blown the doors off. And so, I mean, probably the only marquee non-conference game left is in the end of January when they're at Kansas.
And that's part of the SEC Big 12 challenge.
Right. They moved that challenge to the end of January for this year. David, anyone else in the SEC that you're looking at so far?
At early in the year to get people to the arena and build interest, and now they've moved it to January to get interest in the event because it was going, so they've kind of gone backwards. That really, I don't know, getting back to kind of what I said earlier, we really need more games like that, I think, at this time of the year, not this particular week when there's all these exempt tournaments, but you need more showcase games in November and December. I really wish they hadn't moved that.
Well, David, let me turn now to a couple other conferences. Quick look at the American Conference. Tulsa, we mentioned, had been undefeated, but they're in the process of losing right now. Your thoughts on the most important, biggest story out of the American so far, and by that I mean the fact that Tulane has already lost two games to SWAC teams, and I don't know that any team has ever lost two games to a SWAC team in the same season.
It is pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, the top of this league looks like Sweet 16 caliber teams, and the bottom of it looks like the SWAC. It is a wide-ranging league in that regard. I've been impressed, and I realize it's an eye test thing. They haven't played anybody of note at all, but I've been – Cincinnati has been blowing teams up the way you would expect a ranked team to be doing. I think they're really good. They do have some out-of-conference tests coming up. But I think I'm actually more impressed with them than anybody. And it is an eye test thing because despite them having such a weak schedule so far, they look really good. And they can shoot the ball, something that they haven't been able to do seemingly in the last 28 years or so.
Say what you will about Tulane, but it's not as impressive as Houston last year losing to both a MEAC and a SWAC school back-to-back.
Beating UConn.
Beating UConn. John T., let me bring you in here. I'll go over to the A-10. We know you were there for the GW win. They're still undefeated, remarkably not in the top 25 this week. I thought they would crack it. On top of that, you got a St. Joe's team that I think has been a little bit better than we expected them to be.
Yes.
Anyway, nothing out of St. Joe's, and the 2-point win over ODU on Sunday was amazing just because I thought ODU was a bankable NCAA tourney team, and now I'm feeling much more skeptical about that. Obviously, the game next Tuesday, home to Villanova, is going to be huge for Phil Martelli and the Hawks. So if they can even stay close with Villanova, I think they can chalk that up as a quality loss and move on. The rest of the non-conference play looks pretty sustainable and winnable. And then in 8-10 play, I think the conference is some solid teams with GW, maybe Rhode Island, although Matthews got hurt, VCU, although they've had a rough stretch. So I think St. Joe's is in play for the top of the 8-10, which I wouldn't have said 2 weeks ago.
Can I ask you what you think of Dayton so far? Because I've really liked what I've seen out of them.
Yeah, I mean, considering they were missing Daishon Pierre with the 9-game or 10-game suspension, they beat William & Mary, who I really like this year, by 3 points at home, so we'll see. They have a big game on Thanksgiving in a neutral site against Iowa, and then they come back a couple games later and go to Vanderbilt on December 9th. So we're going to get a very good idea of if Dayton is for real or not. I don't think they're going to beat Iowa and Vandy. If they do, I am driving that bandwagon, but they can even...
I really like that Dayton-Iowa game for Thanksgiving night.
Yeah, that's a big game too, because it's again, Chad mentioned this earlier, winner's bracket, loser's bracket. I think Dayton needs it a little more. They do have some meat on their schedule. They have some meat in the conference. Davidson, I think, is going to be good again. Rhodey, you mentioned them. VCU, you mentioned them. But to win that game against Iowa and get to play against the likes of Notre Dame, Xavier, Wichita, that's a big kind of pivotal game for Dayton, isn't it?
One other conference we want to discuss, and I'm not even certain from the way they've played so far that they belong on the show and not on the Under the Radar show, and that's the Mountain West. John S., you've been a bit of a Mountain West guy the last few years. What's going on here with San Diego, especially with San Diego State?
I think they're passing the torch from the Mountain West over to the Sun Belt Conference. We've already mentioned UT Arlington earlier in the show. Now we need to mention Arkansas Little Rock going into a place that's very difficult to win in the Viejas Arena in San Diego.
Yeah, and I mean, that's amazing. Arkansas Little Rock, another team that we didn't pick anywhere near the top of the Sun Belt. If they, you know, they lose the team that we thought was going to be number one or number two in the Sun Belt, it's one thing, but wow. And John T., one team that I guess is doing pretty well so far in the Mountain West is this Fresno State team that you liked heading into the season.
Yeah, their four wins. Looks like they've been a couple close games. The opener with Pepperdine was just a three-point win at home. They have decided to join the Pac-12 in the weeks ahead, playing at Oregon and at Arizona, so we'll see how that goes. And the conference is way up for grabs. I really thought Boise and San Diego State were going to be leading the pack, and they have both been very average at best. So this conference is wide open, and I fear that it might not be a multi-bid league, which seems crazy. But, yeah, I don't know how the second-best team in this conference, I don't know if they're going to get 20 wins or not.
I guess
Colorado State's win over Northern Iowa be the best win to date for the Mountain West.
And I was going to go right there. That great point, John. It's, you know, if Northern Iowa is for real, that's going to become a real impressive win for Colorado State.
Yeah, well, and again, Colorado State's unbeaten so far, so as you mentioned.
We want to mention just briefly mention a few teams outside of these conferences that are worth noteworthy. Gonzaga, BYU, and Wichita State being the three that are either top 25 or not under the radar type teams. We haven't seen much from Gonzaga so far. They've only played two games.
Two games that counted.
Two games that counted, and one game that didn't count. BYU, Dave, are you a little disappointed in them so far?
I'm not disappointed at all, because if they land outside the bubble, it's a much easier bracket to build. I'm actually quite pleased with them so far.
And John T., how about this Wichita State team? And they've got an injury problem now.
They do. Their heart and soul, their team, Fred VanVleet, I believe, has a hamstring injury and is going to miss the upcoming tournament this week. And it's a big loss. They've already lost to Tulsa by 10 on the road against a good Tulsa team. The rest of their schedule with Charleston Southern and Emporia State have been underwhelming, to say the least. Another big Thanksgiving game against USC and then Utah in a couple weeks to have the Pac-12 again. The conference also seems a little down. Northern Iowa is for real, but they just lost so much from last year. I'm still stunned they beat the Tar Heels. But this is Wichita State's conference to lose, unless VanVleet is gone for a long period of time.
Yeah, I getting a little into beyond Wichita State, I still think Evansville and Illinois State are teams to keep eyes on in this conference as well. Let's kind of move on to some of the games that are coming up in the next week, and there's a lot of tournament games coming up. We did do in our last week in our Hoops HD report, we went through a lot of those upcoming tournaments and the potential matchups. We will touch on a few of them, but I also want to particularly note a few games that are coming up in the next week or so that are outside of the tournaments that we didn't really haven't really discussed. And tomorrow night, we did mention this already a little earlier, that Valparaiso at Oregon State game is coming up. Anything else that you're looking at, anyone's looking at for tomorrow night, either in or outside the tournaments, that they're really looking forward to?
Anybody.
And I mean, I guess we have Vandy and Wake Forest is now set as one of the Maui Invitational semifinals, so that should be.
That's a good one. Oh, Indiana and the Johnnies should be. both teams play horrible defense, and one team is horrible on offense. So it should be a great one.
I did just mention that Illinois State team. They are going to be playing Maryland in the semifinal round of the Cancun Challenge.
Yes, I got one that doesn't impact the bracket, but it is a little interesting just because of the stories. Army at Tennessee. I am kind of looking forward to that one. And again, Army's out to a 3-1 start. I would love to see them do well and get a win like this. I don't think they will, but that's kind of one that I got circled tomorrow.
Coming up on Wednesday, the battle for Atlantis starts, and I think we'll highlight all four of the quarterfinals of that tournament, including the Gonzaga-Washington game, the Texas-Texas A&M game. But outside of the tournaments, a little bit interested in the Yale at Duke game. I don't think that Yale could win the game, John T., but do you think they could be a little bit competitive against Duke, or especially with Justin Sears?
I want to say yes because of Sears. He's an amazing player, should be the conference player of the year this year. He put up an amazing stat line last week. I think it was like 16 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, and 8 blocks. Like, I've seen guys get quadruple doubles and get near quadruple doubles, but you rarely see assists and blocks together because they're two diametrically opposite positions on the court. He really does a little of everything. If it was in New Haven, I'd give them a prayer. I don't think they can beat Duke on the road, but good luck.
Coming up on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, there is a lot of basketball also, as games from a lot of these tournaments will be continuing. Also, the NIT season tip-off starting, which is going to be the Villanova Invitational, I think. But
used to be a great tournament.
Sorry, John S., you mentioned the Iowa-Dayton game. I think that's a real intriguing game in the Orlando or the Advocare Invitational quarterfinal round.
Yeah, I have a feeling when the tournament organizers were putting together this bracket, they had Iowa and Dayton as a possible 4-5 matchup, although Notre Dame and Monmouth is another game we may want to watch. Could the Irish possibly lay an egg against the Hawks of Monmouth?
Coming up on Friday, Black Friday here, Miami's hosting Northeastern, a team that I know, David, you kind of liked out of the Colonial.
I like them a little less now.
Okay. We've also got a doubleheader, the Hall of Fame doubleheader, which might be the wrong matchups. Kentucky, South Florida, followed by Ohio State, Memphis.
And whoever's in charge should be shot of that.
And John S., we have a classic NCAA tournament rematch from a few years ago as Florida Gulf Coast will be at Florida. Sweet 16 rematch.
Yeah.
But moving on to Saturday, John T., let me bring you here on this game. A real interesting game that's not in any event. It's this Old Dominion at VCU game.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out VCU. I know they lost a lot of players from last year as well as their legendary coach, Shaka Smart. And we all like Will Wade coming over from Chattanooga, who is Smart's former assistant. Obviously, losses to the last two teams that were in the national championship, Duke and Wisconsin, both by single digits, is not any cause for concern or hit the panic button. But Old Dominion has gotten off to an average start, so I think VCU will, I think they'll lose, but I think they'll keep it close. And then they got a lot of tough games in December, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Cincinnati. It's going to be a long season in Richmond for the Rams.
What is the temperature of that rivalry, John? Now that it's not a conference game, has it cooled off quite a bit? Because these are two schools that for years absolutely hated each other.
They did. I mean, I think when I think of that area of Virginia where I've traveled to a couple of times for work, actually, I haven't been fortunate enough to go to the basketball games. I see it as kind of a VCU and Richmond just because they're in the same city. And Old Dominion and Norfolk State because they're kind of in the Norfolk, Portsmouth, Virginia Beach area. But they're all right around each other. And I think it's been enough of a basketball hotbed with several great players and coaches over the past several decades that I think both the fans and the players get up for all of those games.
John S., let me bring in here one other matchup coming up Saturday night. Belmont at BYU. Any thoughts on that game?
Well, Belmont did get, a win over at Marquette, but they've struggled since on the road to pick up any other wins of note. I do think BYU will start to get on the right track and get a win against the Bruins at home.
And David, coming up on Sunday, another interesting game, Wisconsin's at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know how interesting it's going to be after the game starts. Whiskey's played better. You know, they had a real shocking loss in their first game against Western Illinois that we talked about several times. But I do think that they're improving. They may be able to step up on the Sooners. If they can pull it off, that's the kind of thing that can just catapult your year onto the, let your team onto the scene and going into the right direction. But it's much easier said than done. I like Oklahoma in that game. I like them big, actually.
And given that we're not going to be recording our next report until probably next Monday night, just a few games coming up next Monday. The Big Ten ACC Challenge will actually be starting already with Wake Forest, Rutgers, and Clemson, Minnesota. That's kind of the appetizer day, I guess. But really just a game coming up Monday night, though. LSU is at College of Charleston, in a true road game here.
Well, Charleston is a nice city. Okay. Why not?
And also, John T., Fresno State's going to be at Oregon. I think we mentioned that game a little bit earlier as well.
That is going to be a fantastic matchup. Fresno is undefeated, but three of their games have been at home so far, so that'll be their first true road test, no offense to Rice last Sunday. And I think the Ducks should be able to handle them. Fresno's up and coming, but the Ducks, I think, are for real. And I also wanted to say, on the Saturday games, you really glanced over this undefeated Utah State team going into Duke. What happened?
I had it highlighted. I kind of glanced over it as we went a little further. Without Collette, I don't think they have much of a shot, personally. The game I'd be a little bit more interested in involving a top-ranked team Monday night. Keep an eye on this Illinois State at Kentucky game. It could be a bit of a dangerous game for the Wildcats.
It could also be dangerous potentially for Illinois State.
And speaking of the state of Illinois, the Illini just pulled out a miraculous at the buzzer 3-point win over Chicago State.
I'm so disappointed they didn't score the court. Oh, I would have loved it.
But anything else? Any other games that anyone else is looking at here for the next week that we did not mention?
Well, I think we also want to go back to Illinois for a little bit. One thing we did not hit on for their first four games. They're actually playing them in Springfield because they're doing renovations on the State Farm Center, which used to be known as Assembly Hall, and State Farm Center is going to open up during the Big Ten ACC Challenge when Illinois hosts Notre Dame. I think it's Wednesday next week.
I think this was their last of their games at the out of their arena, so we'll see if that improves their record a little bit getting back home. But on that note, I want to run through and see if anybody has any final thoughts. David, let me start with you.
First of all, you know, we touched on the games coming up. A lot of the better games that will be played this week we didn't touch on because they're part of tournaments and the matchups haven't been set yet. So, again, like I said earlier, I think this is a hugely important week when it comes to NCAA tournament resume games because it's quality matchups away from home and it's a chance to establish themselves. So you got to keep that in mind. And the other thing, and I think we all agree on this, the selection committee does not differentiate between a third place game, a fifth place game. They don't look at it with any less value like, oh yeah, they beat, you know, Hofstra beat somebody so-and-so, but it was in the third place game. I mean, a game is a game is a game and they're all neutral floor. They all mean the same. So, again, this is just a great week of college basketball. I think there's more good matchups this week than any other week of the out-of-conference season, for sure, and maybe most weeks of conference play. My second thought, I'd like to congratulate the Big East for defeating the Big Ten and the Dave Gavitt Challenge. I know it was 4-4, but I think the decision was made that Indiana should only get half credit for beating Creighton.
John S., any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think we've also hit on the fact that early in the season, some teams will get some exposure out of these tournaments. Also wanted to give a little further shout-out to George Mason, who did get two wins and even sent their pep band for the entire weekend for all three of their games. So it would have been something had they pulled out all three, but it did feel like a tournament in some ways for the Patriots, and we'll see if this is part of their road to coming back in the Atlantic 10.
And John T.?
I just need to give some shout-out to Chris Dunn of Providence, coming in as one of the players of the year in the nation. He's living up to it, and then some, averaging about 18, 7, and 6, plus leading the nation in steals with almost 5 a game. His team is 4-0, granted, all at home, and the best team they played was Illinois, who they only beat by 1 point. So I'm not putting him in the tourney, and I don't know if he can win player of the year if he doesn't make the tourney, but he is doing it all for this team, and he is picking them all up on his shoulders.
My final thoughts, I have two of them as well. First of all, one other undefeated team we have not mentioned yet tonight, but they are looking to remain undefeated as they're currently blowing out Mississippi Valley State, and that is the team of the people, the Grand Canyon Antelopes, as we are continuing our campaign to get them eligible for the NCAA tournament. So please make certain you keep tweeting at the NCAA, Lopes hashtag Lopes waiver. The other point is, I think on behalf of everybody here, I could probably say this, we do want to wish everybody out there and their families a happy Thanksgiving, and just be safe out there, everybody, and we will talk to you again real soon.